Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are still celebrating Constitution Week, as a lot of people like stringing it out, and we need to string it out if we're going to cover the Constitution as it is written and as it is being violated, so that we can kind of point out what the federal government has been constrained to do and what they've been completely ignoring and how they've completely usurped all sorts of powers. That's why we go through the ratification debates. That's why we go through the Federalist Papers, those things that clearly delineated those barriers, those walls, the definitions of the Constitution, almost line by line, as the ratifiers went through this in every state. And so this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as 1798Part2.org, as well as RepublicReview.org. You are listening to the only show that is identifying the only solution to getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. The number to call in is 215-867-8255. And before I jump in, we kind of wrapped up yesterday with Article 1, Section 8, getting ready to jump into Article 1, Section 9. But before I do, I want to go through those few things that are, you know, it's important that I grovel every day. I think humility is important. I can't do this alone. Washington couldn't fight the revolution by himself. He actually required men to enlist and support the effort and support the cause, not only at the infantry level, but as well as the financial side, as well as even the marketing side on the emissaries. As Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin were in France, enlisting France's help and so forth. I mean, it requires a lot of help. And so if you've got the time, you've got a computer, you have some computer literacy at least, and you have some resources like a phone, software, and so forth, let me know. Just give me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and we will be happy to go shoulder to shoulder with you in this. There is no more noble endeavor than protecting the liberty of our posterity as it is literally on the precipice of collapse. So we need everyone to stand up. And if you didn't notice, all these lunatic fringes that are occurring both in the Senate process for seating Kavanaugh and in every other capacity, these communists that are actually being placed into the primary positions for Democrats and so forth. I mean, how much closer do you want to get to falling off that precipice? I want to thank you, though. I think it's really important that I at least reach out on a regular basis as much as possible. I know I probably don't do it enough. Thank you for tuning in. It is the first step in getting the word out. It is the first step in learning what we need to do and so forth. So I do appreciate many of you and all of you that are tuning in, especially all of you that are promoting this show and getting other people to start tuning in and listening. I also want to ask you, have you checked out the Constitution Club? A link to it is on my website on reclaimingtherepublic.org on the podcast page. And all you got to do is go to constitutionclub.ning.com, and give it a spin. Actually, you can drill in. You do not have to become a member to actually see what's going on there. And I expect to have Keith on maybe next week. I'd hope to have him on that we can kind of talk about the domain, the access into it, and the future of that domain as things start to kind of shift, because there is an awakening, my friends, and that's probably why this show is growing, and that's why you're probably telling people, hey, did you know that there is academic proof that the federal government does not have any authority to do all these things? So anyway, let me move on. And I do want to move on with this. As I looked through the news and I saw the debacle in every different paradigm, there is no sign that the federal government is going to disband any of their tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers that they have taken from the states. The only, and I mean the only way, we are going to get those powers restored to the states and allow this republic to flourish once again is literally for the states to step up and assert their authority. So that's what we have to do. That's what we have to educate our legislators in the states. And oh, let me do one more thing. I know I have been using, and this number goes all the way back to 2014 when I counted the amount of seats in the state legislators, but actually, to be more accurate, this number actually goes back to the state representatives, the 5445. There was 5,445 state legislators, and it was a beautiful number. I wish we could have kept that, but apparently some states have grown and reallocated the new number today, 2018, currently is 5,461. However, that's only representatives. That does not include senators. And, oh, by the way, did you know Nebraska doesn't have any representatives of the people? They only have senators. Apparently, their unicameral is just so highbrow that they don't need to represent their people. Anyway, the total number of legislatures that we actually need to engage, so I'm going to have to change my 5445 to 7383. That is the number. So the mountain's gotten a little bit higher, but it is still easy in contrast to the 3 million or 330 million folks that we have to try to educate. We have a very, very small fraction of people that we need to engage and educate regarding republic review, auditing the Constitution, and taking back those powers, roles, and responsibilities that have been usurped. Now, as I said earlier, we left off closing out with the sweeping clause of Article 1, Section 8. So now we're on Article 1, Section 9. And these are pretty interesting because there's lots of violations in this. And it starts off with the migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by Congress prior to the year 1808, but a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation not exceeding $10 per person. This was the clause that literally shut down the slave trade clause, and it actually shut down the ability for states to be able to import people directly. The next clause is the privilege of the right of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. Now, lots of people are talking about how the federal government and the president and we're still under martial law. No, the Constitution right here actually speaks to why and when they can shut down habeas corpus. And as near as I can tell, if they want to claim that we're under an invasion, then that invasion is from the southern border. But I'm telling you that that is not the type of invasion that they were envisioning. The invasion is actually hostile forces with guns. Now, you can't tell me, and I guess we all kind of agree, that anybody that is trying to subvert our laws and come here and try to take advantage is an invading force. However, it does not warrant the necessity for Congress, because Congress is actually allowing this to happen, it does not warrant Congress to actually, or the president, to declare martial law. This next one is a huge clause that is constantly being violated. No bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. They are constantly passing laws that make something that was once legal now illegal. What's happening in California, Washington, and throughout the western states is they're passing laws that you can no longer put wells on your property. Even though when you bought that land, it was more than legal, they're now just saying that even though you bought that land, we now restrict you. You cannot. That is an ex post facto law. What they can do, the legal process would be that any new land transfers, if a well is not already on that land, then you cannot put a well on it after that transfer. And so that way, it wouldn't be an ex post facto law. That way, there'd be no grandfathering or anything like that. It would be literally just as we move forward, we're shutting down all wells on the transfer of land and so forth. The next one, no capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. So they really shut down the ability to actually put direct taxes on the people. It had to be done. The direct tax had to be done by proportion or by the census, and how they needed to establish that. And they went by proportion, and they literally laid it out to each of the states, and that's how they paid their tax. Next one, and that has been violated left and right. They have constantly violated how they're taxing and the way they go about levying taxes instead of following the proportionment. No tax or duty shall be laid on articles exported from any state. Now, I'm telling you, this is being violated by many, many of the states that are dictating smog standards, and I'll get into that when we come back, because it is a tax, whether it is a direct draw or a tax upon the commerce itself. So we'll be right back as soon as I have a couple words from my sponsor. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. So this direct tax, or I should say duty or tax, being laid upon articles exported from any state, this has been happening a lot since the environmental agencies and environmental wackos have been going crazy. Every vehicle that is being imported into, and California is the biggest culprit that the federal government should have shut down in the 60s when they started doing this, because no state can dictate the standards of a product coming into their state. However, based on this absurdity, they're putting a tax upon Detroit at the time and all vehicles coming into their state. And so it literally got to a point where Michigan was producing vehicles that were California bound and vehicles that were not California bound, because it cost them a lot more money to try to sell the exact same car. So they were just trying to reduce their costs. Bottom line, it was a violation of the Commerce Clause. No state has the authority or the ability to do that type of dictating. And when they do that, whether it is a tax that they're laying on it or a tax upon the manufacturer itself in the processes. The next one in Article or Section 9, this is the next regulation. No preference shall be given by any regulation of commerce or revenue to the ports of one state over those of another, nor shall vessels bound to or from one state be obliged to enter, clear, or pay duties in another. This is being violated big time. If you understand what's going on in Washington State, where Washington State is refusing to allow coal to be exported from their ports, and they're refusing to allow these manufacturers to build their own port, to, you know, find a small little town along the coast and build a port so that they could literally start exporting their coal and their fuel products. And I'm going, huh, again, the states are trying to assert unconstitutional powers in trying to shut down. And this is all over ideological things. This has nothing to do with commerce. And this is where the progressive ideology is literally running amok amongst our states in a very hostile manner towards the economy of other states. Excuse me. The next one for us is that no money shall be drawn from the Treasury but in consequence of appropriations made by law and a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. Now, I think if you understand the CAFR, and I don't have time to go into all, you know, go into that path, but if you understand what the CAFR is, it is a full financial report that is supposed to be providing that. The Treasury is supposed to be providing that. And good luck finding those things. And if you can find the real deal, then you will actually realize just, you know, how much money is being hidden from the public. But I also want to point out that there is no money to be drawn from the Treasury but in consequence of appropriations made by law. So in other words, appropriations to be made by law, they have to be within the enumerated law. So any appropriations or any money being drawn from the Treasury for something such as healthcare, something such as education, something such as the BLM, any of these unconstitutional entities that have been created, it is illegal and a violation of the Constitution that they are creating this debt. They are literally committing treason by spending money they have no authority to do, because there are plenty of hooks within this Constitution to keep them from doing that, and they're violating every single one of them. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. All right, so now the next one, and this is kind of interesting. This is the one part of the Constitution that puts restrictions upon the state. Those were additional restrictions that were placed upon the federal government and other applied restrictions. But this is the interesting part. These are the restrictions that are actually limiting the states. And Article 1, Section 10 starts off with, "No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque and reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt." So that's one thing that states can do, and the federal government has really been stepping on it. But some states have actually been able, I believe Utah, and I now believe Wyoming, and there's a few other states out there that are able to actually mint and produce their own gold and silver coins. And also, no state shall pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. And so if you look at all of these different violations, they are making, you know, they were violating the fact of states not being able, or states being able to make coin and silver out of, or gold and silver coins, excuse me. Also, they're, the states are violating this fact that they are creating bill of attainders and creating ex post facto laws, and as well as this granting of title and nobility. Anyway, moving forward, no state shall, without the consent of Congress, and oh, by the way, the very beginning of that that first clause, no state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation. There have been plenty of state treaties. And as a matter of fact, if you understand with California and a couple of the other states that have entered into the Paris Accord, they have violated the Constitution right there. And as a matter of fact, they should be shut down when they do those types of things, because currently states can't create treaties and or go into alliances and so forth. Next one. No state shall, without the consent of the Congress, lay any imposts or duties on imports or exports, except what may be absolutely necessary for executing its inspection laws and the net produce of all duties and imposts laid by any state on imports or exports shall be for the use of the Treasury of the United States, and all such laws shall be subject to the revision and control of the Congress. I love the way they spell control there, but anyway, if you look at how states have been laying imposts and or duties, this really hasn't been a huge problem. There's only been a couple of states for agricultural purposes that they actually, you know, do not allow certain fruits to be carried in. They actually have to come through a process, and they do charge a processing fee, inspection fees, and those types of things because of supposedly these quarantine flies and or fruit flies and so forth going into Hawaii, California, and so forth. However, for the most part, this is one part of the Constitution that really hasn't been trampled on too much. The final clause within Section 10, Article 1, Section 10, is no state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any duty of tonnage, keep troops or ships of war, in time of peace, enter into agreement or compact with another state or with a foreign power, or engage in war unless actually invaded or in such imminent danger as will not admit of delay. And so we really haven't had a case of that, but I just have this feeling that we're going to be coming to a close point where California might be violating this part as well. Anyway, let me jump into Article 2. Whew. Now, this whole first 2 days plus, almost 2.5 days, was literally on the roles, responsibilities, and powers that have been given to Congress. Article 2 gets into the details of the presidency or the executive branch. Section 1, the executive power shall be vested in a president of the United States of America. He shall hold his office during the term of 4 years, and together with the vice president chosen for the same term, be elected as follows. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislatures thereof may direct a number of electors equally to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in the Congress, but no senator or representative or person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall be appointed an elector. Just so you understand, the way they divvy this up is each state gets an elector for their electoral college based on how many seats they're occupying in the House, as well as the 2 seats that they occupy in the Senate. That is why Wyoming, that is why a lot of these small little states, Maine and so forth, I believe Montana, Alaska, they only have 3 electoral colleges because our voters, electorates, and that's because they have two senators and they only have one representative in the House of Representatives. And so that is how the distribution of electors for the president is to be selected. Now, this whole concept of winner takes all absolutely denies Republican form of government, because if you understand Article 4, Section 4, when we get to it, I will hopefully try to tie this in. As a matter of fact, I'm going to tie it in when we come back from this break, because it's really important, because we have lost our representation, especially in this process, where if your congressional district votes for one president, but the state votes for another, then you lose your representation. That is an antithesis of our form of government. But we will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VONTRACYDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And so let me go back to what I was just trying to say before the break. When you in your congressional district today as a representative form of government, and actually way back then, we didn't even vote for an outcome. We voted for electors. We based our decision on how smart and how good these people were, and we trusted them to vote who they believed was the best president or the best candidate in the process. However, we started moving away from that, and they started changing the law, because actually in 1800, because they had problems and they wanted to fix the problem that they had in the Thomas Jefferson, John Adams election, they actually amended the Constitution. In doing so, they set precedents that whenever you want to change just a few words in a process, you have to amend the Constitution. This goes back to what I was saying on Monday regarding the 30,000 electors. They started using statutes and regulations in changing how we were to be represented, when clearly the framers set the example that if you're going to change that process, you have to have the states buy off on it through the Article 5 process. In other words, it requires an amendment if you're making any change in substance and form to this contract. Moving forward, as we have
gotten into this position that we have today. And under the understanding of republicanism, your congressional elector in your congressional district, if your congressional district voted for Trump, then that vote, that electoral college vote, should have voted for Trump. However, again, it is so ambiguous because everything has been changed since the 12th Amendment, because they have not followed this process and they've been moving it. And I am telling you, the way it is stacked up, it makes it easier and easier for progressives to be able to take advantage. And that's why we've seen progressives and or populists be able to actually win the elections. This is a huge problem. And we need to get back to complying to this. But then again, this isn't our number one problem. Truly, our number one problem is the just the sheer size and the out-of-control government in all of the powers that it is executing at this point in time. So anyway, let me move on to the next clause, and this is the redefining of the electors. The electors shall meet in the representative states and vote by ballot for two persons of whom one at least shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves. And they shall make a list of the persons voted for and the number of votes for each, which list they shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of government of the United States, directed to the President of the Senate. The President of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all certificates, and the votes shall be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes shall be the president, if such number be a majority, if the whole number of electors appointed, and if there be more than one who have such majority and have an equal number of votes, then the House of Representatives shall immediately choose by ballot one of them for president, and if no persons have a majority, then from the five highest on the list, the said House shall in like manner choose the president, but in choosing the president, the votes shall be taken by the states, the representatives of each state having one vote. A quorum for this purpose shall consist of a member or members from 2/3 of the states, and a majority of, and that's where the Electoral College came from, the 2/3 majority, and of, or a majority of all the states shall be necessary to a choice. In every case after the choice of the president, the persons having the greatest number of votes of the electors shall be the vice president, if there should remain two or more having equal votes, the Senate shall choose from them by a ballot the vice president. Now, so this whole thing was modified again in the 12th Amendment. And so if you start ferreting through both the 12th Amendment and how they simplified some of this, it just irks me, and it just proves the point that over time, Congress felt that they didn't need, and the federal government felt they didn't need to go through the amendment process in clearing up how to choose a president. Now, I want you to understand, again, in the grand scheme of things, this really isn't that big of a crisis, but the biggest crisis, obviously, is this out-of-control spending and this insatiable thirst for power that the federal government has been centralizing and seeking and taking from the states. Let me move on. The Congress may determine the time of choosing the electors and the day on which they shall give their votes, which day shall be the same throughout the United States. So Congress is going to determine the day of the election, and it will be the same day as moving forward. Now they get into the requirements of, you know, the citizenship and everything else. Remember Ted Cruz, remember Obama, and so forth. No person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution. So in other words, this was the only sneaking under the rug for somebody that was not a natural-born citizen. In other words, you had to be a citizen at the adoption of the Constitution. And moving forward, you had to be a natural-born citizen. Shall be eligible to the office of president. Neither shall any person be eligible to that office who shall not have attained to the age of 35. In other words, you have to be a minimum of 35 and be 14 years a resident within the United States. So go figure that out. How is it that we would have a president unless that president had been serving as an ambassador, traveling abroad, and so forth in today's world? But back in those days, they had territories. Those territories may have been Canadian, may have been Spain, or I should say French and English and so forth. In case of the removal of the president, this is a good one too, because this was changed by the 15th Amendment. In case of the removal of the president from office or of his death or inability to discharge the 25th Amendment, or inability to discharge the powers and duties of the said office, the same shall devolve on the vice president, and the Congress may by law provide for the case of removal, death, resignation, or inability both of the president and vice president, declaring what officer shall then act as president, and such officer shall act accordingly until the disability be removed or a president shall be elected. So this is what a lot of those in the on the Democratic side in the House and the Senate have been trying to clamor for. They're trying to get the president, President Trump, basically identified as disabled and unable and unfit to perform his job as president. And so there is a real tough road to hoe. We've never gone down this path. And in all honesty, I think we've had plenty of presidents in the past that probably would have been more qualified to probably be scrutinized. But this is a huge, huge hurdle to overcome, especially a popular president like President Trump. The president shall at stated times receive for his service a compensation which shall neither be increased nor diminished during the period for which he shall have been elected, and he shall not receive within that period any other emolument from the United States or any of them. So in other words, that he can't be taking money from the United States for any other compensations or from another state. Before he enter on the execution of his office, he shall take the following oath or affirmation. And this is very specific, that this is what he has to swear to. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. How many presidents have violated that oath? Many. Many have violated that oath, and unfortunately, so many don't even know what is in the Constitution or understand it. They practically are all violating it because of that. Article 2, Section 2, the President shall be the Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states. And I know of a couple people that have long-term squabbles over the Commander-in-Chief issue here. I just want to go through this because I don't see this as any violation. The next violation comes in the next paragraph. And so when called into the actual service of the United States, he may require the opinion in writing of the principal officer in each of the executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices, and he shall have power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. And so this next one is definitely one that is, and we're dealing with this right now because this has everything to do with advice and consent of the Senate, right? We're going through that case currently with Kavanaugh, trying to get him seated, and how the Democrats are just literally running amok. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so in this next section, or I should say this next clause within Section 2, is where he shall have advice and consent. And it starts off with, he, the president, shall have power and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties provided 2/3 of the senators pass or present concur, and he shall nominate and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate shall appoint ambassadors to public other public ministers, counsels, judges of the Supreme Court, and all other officers of the United States, whose by appointments are not herein otherwise provided for, and which shall be established by law. But the Congress may by law vest the appointment of such inferior officers as they think proper in the president alone, in the courts of law, or in the heads of departments. So they actually can give him the ability, but when they want to stall, how many heads of departments and heads of his executive departments are still waiting to be processed? I mean, this obstructionism that the Democrats have put up has literally had a huge impact on our ability to actually take away the constraints that the progressives from the Clintons and Bushes and Obamas have put on us. Next up, and oh, by the way, this advice and consent on these treaties, it requires 2/3 of the senators present, so that we have to have a majority, not just a minor majority, but a super majority of 2/3. 66 senators need to vote and pass these treaties, such as these Iran, and so many of these so-called treaties have never been qualified by this 2/3 majority. We've got a lot of treaties that have been created by presidents like Obama that have never been constitutionally ratified. In other words, we're living under treaties and following treaties we shouldn't be following. The president shall have power to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of their next session. Now, President Obama violated the Constitution, so this is a perfect example of this, where he actually, where The Senate was not in recess. They were just on break, and he took advantage of what calling their break recess and tried to seat some. And the Supreme Court actually admonished him and called him out for violating the Constitution. Now, technically, that would have given Congress and the Senate grounds to impeach him, because he violated the Constitution, the laws of the land. And that is, you know, high crimes and or misdemeanors. Anyway, let me move forward with Section 3 of Article 2. Section 3, he shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. He may, on extraordinary occasions, convene both houses or either of them, and in case of disagreement between them with respect to the time of adjournment, he may adjourn them to such time as he shall think proper. He shall receive ambassadors from other states and other public ministers. He shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. And so that's his biggest job right there. And this is where the Constitution gets violated severely by the president, because they're not faithfully executing the laws. They either interpret the laws how they want to. And Bush was a great example of how he did not follow the law, even though I didn't like a lot of the laws. He chose to how he wanted to execute those laws, and shall commission all officers of the United States. And those officers being in the military, the president, vice president, and all, this is section four, the president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. Article 3. Now, this is where we're going to have some fun, because we've talked a lot about jurisdiction in the ratification debates, and we're going to get into this in Section 1 and 2. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges both of the Supreme and inferior courts shall hold their offices during good behavior. So here's a big question, because what do you define as good behavior? And this is what we really have to drill into, because we are finding that judges are behaving badly, especially when they are overreaching their boundaries of jurisdiction, and shall at stated times receive for their services a compensation which shall not be diminished during their continuance in office. Now, Section 2 is the big part, because this is what we really got into in the ratification debates, and even Marshall cited this. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution. In other words, that is the limitation of their jurisdiction. It has to arise under the Constitution. It has to be within the enumerated powers. As Madison said, Nicholas said, even Marshall said, that they cannot extend their jurisdiction outside of those things that are not within the Constitution, period. The law, and so this is also to add to their jurisdiction. The laws of the lands of the United States, which are constitutional under the Constitution, and treaties made, and I just added that part, by the way, the laws of the United States, one has to assume that those laws are constitutional and within the confines of the enumerated powers. Okay, and moving on, they also have jurisdiction over treaties made or which shall be made under their authority to all cases of, and so these treaties being made, they only have jurisdiction if they have been constitutionally ratified by 2/3 of the Senate. To all cases affecting ambassadors, so they have jurisdiction over all foreign ambassadors. And this is where they were very smart in making sure that they were protecting the interests and the lives of American citizens and other public ministers and consuls. To all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, to controversies to which the United States shall be a party with foreign entities, to controversies between two states or more, between a state and citizens of another state, Now, this was modified in the 11th Amendment, and between citizens of different states, between the citizens of the same state, claiming lands under grants of different states and between states, or the citizens thereof and the foreign states, citizens or subjects. In other words, there has to be a reach across boundaries where the Supreme Court will step in, because there is obviously no single cognizant authority over both parties. When you have two states involved, a foreign entity in a state, people across the state boundaries and so forth, that is the only time the federal courts have a duty and jurisdiction to rule whether those contracts, those lands or what have you, have been discharged or purchased or what have you properly. In all cases, so this is the second clause of Section 2, or the second paragraph. In all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers, and consuls, and in those which state shall be the party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. In all other cases before mentioned, the Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction, both as to the law and fact, with such exceptions and under such regulations as the Congress shall make. I want you to notice that Congress actually up above, and in this paragraph right here, Congress actually has the oversight over these courts. Congress could easily reel in the courts, especially when they start stepping across their bounds, like Hawaii, when they stepped into Trump's travel bans and so forth, and whether that was Washington State as well. I mean, there have been a few states that have overreached their bounds in trying to step in and stopping the president. It really requires a district court to really do something like that. And more importantly, the Supreme Court should be actually quick to respond to those instead of having these things drag out. There's no reason why we're becoming victims and being held hostage to these courts, these activist courts. The trial of all crimes, except in cases of impeachment, shall be by jury. There you go. And such trial shall be held in the state where the said crimes have been committed. But when not committed within any state, the trial shall be in such place or places as the Congress may by law have directed. So they're just basically telling you where your tail is going to be sitting and parked as you're being tried. I could easily go into, and I should, this is Section 3. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to the enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or on confession in an open court. The Congress shall have power to declare and punishment of treason, but no attainder of treason shall be corruption of blood or forfeiture except during the life of the person attained. In other words, the one thing that you can expect if you commit treason is you will forfeit your life if they feel necessary. So they've given the United States government the ability to execute for treason and treason alone. As you can see, I'm out of time, but we're actually in Article 4, and everything is going to be on the downhill slide. So I am G.R. Mobley. I am Reclaiming the Republic. I need your help. We'll be back tomorrow with more constitutional facts. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.